From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Fillmore.
I'm from San Jose.
I'm from the Intermission.
UCCC World.
West Oakland.
East Oakland.
Coming up, we'll find out how Alameda County is trying to help people stay out of jail.
On an annual basis, what you had coming from this area was something like 8,000 people coming and going into jail.
Then we'll hear from a cop who wants to change how we approach public safety.
I think that the enfranchisement of all of our communities and the involvement in the process is a key to lowering crime and communicating better.
And we'll find out what it's like to get to know your child for the first time when she's an adult.
Well, I was able to develop a relationship as her being a woman now. She's not a kid no more. She's a grown person.
Life after incarceration. That's today on Cross Currents. For the past several weeks, we've been looking at what happens to prisoners who are released back into the community after time spent behind bars. It's part of our series examining Governor Brown's realignment strategy, which is designed to reduce prison overcrowding by keeping lower-level inmates in jail rather than prison. The plan also involves releasing some inmates before their entire sentences are served. Statistics show that incarceration is often a revolving door. In California, 65% of people return to prison within the first 3 years of their release, usually within the first year, according to the most recent statistics from the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. A new program in Alameda County is trying to help inmates make it on the outside by working with them both inside the jails and, here's what's new, supporting them when they get out, often right from the moment they leave jail. The Alameda County Sheriff's Department started Operation My Hometown in 2011 with a grant from the Justice Department to target inmates at high risk of returning to jail. Reporter Charlotte Silver helps us understand how it works.
Arthur Streeter is the program director for Operation My Hometown. He's taking me to meet an inmate who's going to be released from jail today.
We're going to go pick him up. We're going to bring him to a little eatery, let him get something to eat. And then we're going to go to an emergency shelter that he's going to stay at and on International in East Oakland.
He's talking about Hayden Hindenburg, who's been incarcerated at Santa Rita Jail for the last 6 months. Streeter is already strategizing about what to do when he meets Hindenburg.
Usually because they're hungry. What happened with him, pretty much, he was probably awakened at 3 o'clock in the morning, brought to a holding cell, shifted to another holding cell, and then brought to the final place where he's going to leave.
Streeter tells me Hindenburg was picked up for a probation violation in Berkeley and sent back to jail.
He had a knife on him, and it was a pocket knife or some sort of knife. And he was violated for that, and I do believe he had to do 6 months, which did not sound too correct to me that he would do so much time.
Streeter is not clear on the specifics of Hindenburg's crimes, because even though Operation My Hometown is financed through the Sheriff's Department, it has very little to do with the courts. In fact, Streeter says he doesn't pay much attention to the specific offenses his clients committed.
If I were concerned about the crimes he did or the crimes any of these people that are getting out of jail did, if I were concerned about it, I wouldn't be able to work with them.
Why?
Because it would fall into a judgment class, and that's not what my position and capacity is based on.
Streeter is interested in Hindenburg's future.
One of the first things I'm going to ask him is, does he plan to come back to jail?
Okay.
Because that's just one of those questions that they're never asked. It's very easy to go to jail. You know, a lot of people don't know that. Anyone can wind up in jail.
But statistically, it seems especially easy for people in the Eden area of Alameda County to wind up in jail. When I first met Streeter at his office in San Leandro, he told me that each year, approximately 8,000 people from this neighborhood cycle through Santa Rita. That means that more than 35% of the jail population comes from the Eden area.
So it's like a community of people that are incarcerated and on probation and incarcerated. So this area was targeted by the Sheriff's Department to change that.
Initially, the program was intended to target Eden, an unincorporated and largely neglected part of the county. but the popularity of the program has encouraged it to branch out and serve inmates coming from Berkeley, Hayward, and Oakland. Streeter says people who spend weeks or months in jail can lose their job, their apartment. It's hard to pick up the pieces on release. Hindenburg is in his early 40s and homeless.
He has lost everything. So he's coming out of jail with nothing. He has nothing.
While we're driving the 45-minute car ride from Oakland to Santa Rita Jail, Streeter gets a phone call informing him that an Oakland shelter has enough space to take Hindenburg. Streeter is relieved. Now he knows how the next few hours are going to look. We arrive at the jail at around 10:30 a.m. As we walk from the parking lot to the jail lobby, Streeter points to some men waiting at a bus stop.
You will have on average anywhere from 75 to 100 people coming and going daily, every day. So they'll bring in a busload of people that are incarcerated, and then they can ship out a busload of people, people being released, you know, walking down the ramp. Now see, these guys just got out.
Okay. Waiting for a bus.
They're waiting for a bus. And they may be going, some of them could be going, you know, to okay places. Some of them could be going right back to the streets.
When we enter the lobby, Streeter disappears to retrieve Hindenburg, who is waiting for him. I wait in the lobby with caseworkers, family members, and lawyers. After about 20 minutes, Streeter returns with Hindenburg, who I'm seeing for the first time.
This is Hayden.
I'm Charlotte.
All right. Nice. So what we're going to do is we're going to step out here. I'm going to wait for this guy.
Hindenburg is wearing an oversized white shirt and carrying a plastic bag with all of his belongings. He's heavy set and follows closely behind Streeter as they walk outside.
How do you feel right now?
I feel all right. I'm really happy to be released.
Hindenburg says he's happy to get out, but he's tired too. He tells us that he woke up at 4 a.m., had a little breakfast, and has been mostly waiting since. It's now nearly 11. Streeter's mission is to make sure this is Hindenburg's last time at Santa Rita.
But you're going, and you're gone. So now my question to you, do you plan to come back here?
Nope, I don't plan to come back here. Hopefully, now that you're helping me, I'm going to stay out of here for good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you know what my job is?
Yep.
To keep you out of here. I'm going to block you away from coming back in here.
Thank you, sir.
And the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to help you with whatever you need.
Yep, skate stuff. It ain't good for anybody. I wouldn't advise anybody to come here. So I'm pretty sure I'm not going to come back here.
I ask what he did in the past after getting released from a stint in jail.
I'd be homeless, you know what I mean? I have no place to go, so I would go back to Hayward and I'd fall back to whatever I was doing, like drugs and all that, you know what I mean? But I want to stay out of that right now. And I want to see if I can get my daughter, you know what I mean? My daughter Maria, I really love her. And like ever since I've been here, she's been CPS.
That's Child Protective Services, basically foster care. Maria is 6 years old. Hindenburg says she came to visit once while he was in jail last November. Every one of Streeter's 14 clients has a different goal, something that might keep them on track. For some, it's going back to school. For others, it's avoiding an overdose. For Hindenburg, it's getting his daughter back. It's Streeter's job to help Hindenburg meet his goal, but it won't all happen at once. We walk back to the car and head toward San Leandro.
So did you think you would get out of jail this way?
No.
Kind of weird, isn't it?
Hindenburg doesn't say a lot in the car. He's hungry. We stop at a Quiznos for some food.
Can I get the black eye and the steak?
What size in the frame?
What size is that?
Huh?
I got regular.
Come with onions and mushrooms?
Yeah, put everything on.
We go outside to eat lunch. It's a hot day. Hindenburg was detained months ago in the dead of winter, and his access to the sun has been severely restricted.
How much time do you get outside?
Maybe once every other week. On a good week, we go out twice in that week. You know, it depends on the deputy who's working, you know what I mean?
So not a lot of sun.
Not a lot of sun. Always indoor.
Streeter makes a few phone calls to try and schedule an interview for Hindenburg for a job that pays $13 an hour. He's also working out a longer-term plan for Hindenburg.
You don't have any substance abuse problems, right?
No.
Alcohol?
No, I don't drink.
Oh, you don't drink?
No.
crack?
Nope.
Coke?
Nope.
Meth?
Meth, I lost my thing for it.
When? Like, how long?
Like 6 months ago.
Okay, so now, can we think about that?
Yep.
What can we think about that?
My daughter.
Yes, we have to think about your daughter.
Now, I ain't going to go back to that.
Yeah, because if you go back to any kind of meth...
Then I'm coming back to Santa Rita.
You will definitely go back to Santa Rita because you'll be violating yourself. And then we have to find out.
Streeter is referring to violating the conditions of Hindenburg's probation. Using meth is always illegal, but the penalty could be harsher if Hindenburg is caught using while on probation. Hindenburg finishes up his sandwich, chips, and Coke, and we get back in the car to head to the offices of Operation My Hometown in Eden. At the headquarters, Streeter runs into the manager of Dig Deep, a local organic farm that employs formerly incarcerated people.
I got one more interview. I got one more. So
together, they find a time for Hindenburg to interview for a job later today. In his office, Streeter walks Hindenburg through a packet of documents he needs to sign in order to enroll in the Operation My Hometown program.
Okay, so consent for treatment, confidentiality, beneficiary, that's there, notice of privacy. So that's what all of that's about. And if you want to read it, you can read it. It's just to protect you.
The Affordable Care Act now reimburses Operation My Hometown for many of the services it provides, making the program more sustainable long term. Mm-hmm. Next, Hindenburg gets his interview with Dig Deep Farms and lands the job. Things are going smoothly, which is not always the case, according to Streeter.
This is extremely unusual for him to be released from jail and then walk right into an interview. That is a full-time position. It just doesn't happen that way. Usually it's a process. It can take 2 or 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, you know, on and on. But he's in an extremely privileged position today. And it's, you know, it doesn't normally happen this way, but the cards fell in the right places.
Streeter is piecing together the next steps for Hindenburg. Since he will have an income from his work at Dig Deep, he's on the road to being able to get his own place eventually.
If he is working, we can start looking for housing for him and his daughter.
But for now, Hindenburg will be staying at a place called Crossroads. That's where we're headed next. Crossroads is a temporary shelter in East Oakland that also helps people get medical treatment, housing, and jobs. They're expecting Hindenburg, and the pass-off from Streeter is swift.
So we'll be taking care of Mr. Hindenburg. So it's lunchtime right now. Are you hungry?
Okay, and you are a lifesaver. You're a lifesaver. She's a lifesaver. I'm serious. I'm so serious.
Well, he's in good hands, so we'll make sure he's okay.
All right, so look, you take care of yourself. Just follow the rules and just be cool, and I'll make sure that you get a clip of card, okay?
Sorry.
While Streeter drives me back to BART, he rattles off stories of former and current clients who have had varying degrees of success in the program. One woman he worked with got kicked out of her first shelter before finally getting on her feet.
She's back with her husband. She graduated from her 2-year college. They're ready to buy a house. And I worked with her husband. He was a career criminal.
But it turns out Hindenburg is not one of those successes. At least not yet. 3 days after we dropped Hindenburg off, he left Crossroads and hasn't come back. Despite this setback, Streeter is still optimistic about the program.
But, you know, the door is always open. See, that's the other aspect of our intensive case management, because it's a therapeutic approach. The door is always open. Because, you know, it's a voluntary situation. It's not like your arm is twisted and you're going to do this and, you know, we have these papers over your head. It's like, if you want to live, just come on. You can do it. We can help you.
Operation My Hometown is just 3 years old. Streeter tells me that of the 150 people they've served so far, about a quarter have accomplished the goals they established at the beginning. The rest follow a path more like Hindenburg. That doesn't mean they end up back in jail, but they lose track of what they set out to do and stop working with Streeter. These men and women have spent years cycling in and out of jail with little or no support in between. The process of remedying that will likely take longer than an afternoon, but it's where Alameda County is starting. For Cross Currents, I'm Charlotte Silver.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We just heard about the Operation My Hometown program in Alameda County, and now we get to meet the cop behind this new approach to public safety. Lieutenant Martin Neidefer oversees the Youth and Family Services Bureau Crime Prevention Unit for the Alameda County Sheriff's Office. He joined me to tell us more about his projects, which include a youth soccer league, a jobs program that provides fresh food in the community, and more. I started by asking him to tell us about the Eden area of Alameda County, which has high crime and incarceration rates.
So the Eden area is the unincorporated area of Alameda County. So it's made up of the communities of Castro Valley, San Lorenzo, Fairview, or unincorporated Hayward, and also the communities of Ashland and Cherryland. I grew up there in Ashland. Arguably, it's a working-class community without the work that used to be there when I was a kid. Without those blue-collar jobs that used to pay a living, allow you to put a roof over your head and your kids through school and some level of security in your life, I think that that doesn't exist like it used to exist.
Uh-huh. And when did the Alameda County Sheriff's Department get involved in this kind of post-release rehabilitation effort? What sparked that?
The Sheriff's Office has been involved in community policing for a long time. In 2011, we received a Department of Justice Second Chance Act grant that we used to begin the process of sort of linking outside programming and outside activities to the activities that are going on in the jail to try to create a jail-to-jobs pipeline, if you will. And that, I think, is recognizing that in Ashland and Cherryland specifically, there's large concentrations of ex-offenders or formerly incarcerated individuals who are living in those areas.
Living in areas where it's already hard to get a job, and then you come out with a felony conviction and it's much harder.
Correct. So the idea was that that the jail could be used as a community policing asset.
I think, though, that a lot of people make the assumption that I might make that law enforcement really isn't thinking about that piece of it, you know? Jobs is not your job.
That's right. And I think that's been historically true. But I think that's changing. Law enforcement is been given the responsibility of protecting neighborhoods. And if these issues, such as jobs and health and educational opportunities and all of those things are core fundamental drivers of crime, I would submit that we should be involved in developing solutions to those problems, to those core drivers of crime. I would further say that as we become more involved in that and communities recognize the police and the sheriff's offices as being involved in dealing and coming up with solutions or working with them to come up solutions to these real core problems, the trust between law enforcement and those communities would increase.
So in the story that we just heard about Operation My Hometown, we heard the piece, the post-release piece. And in this story, the man was not a success story, even though he was able to get a job the first day, get placement in a temporary shelter, et cetera. What are some of the big challenges that you face in trying to end this cycle of incarceration?
So I think that everybody's an individual. And if one of the best practices or evidence-based practices that's emerging from this discussion is what they're calling risk needs and responsivity. You cannot treat everybody in a cookie-cutter format. Everybody goes into this program, everybody goes into that program. And expect that each individual is going to have his or her needs met. But the idea is that you take every person as an individual, find out what their risks and needs are, create a personalized reentry plan, and then through our clinical case management model, guide them through the process. It's a tough process. I mean, I think many of the folks that are coming through have substance abuse issues, which can trip them up. Many of them have dysfunctional family issues. It's difficult when you've cycled through the institution four or five times in your life. Many times you've frayed most of those close relationships to you. That can create hurdles. It's tough finding a job. It's tough navigating systems. So all of those things, I think, are problematic, and those are the things that we're working hard to iron out and to straighten out with each of the individuals that come through the program.
That's Lieutenant Martin Neidefer, who oversees the Youth and Family Services Bureau Crime Prevention Unit for the Alameda County Sheriff's Office. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. So in that last piece, we heard about Operation My Hometown, you know, after post-release.
Right.
What we didn't hear about is what happens within the jail, which is a whole different system. So what does the program look like inside?
Right. So part of the systems change that went into creating Operation My Hometown was to establish a housing unit inside Santa Rita Jail. That is what we're calling our rehabilitation-based incarceration house.
And just for listeners, Santa Rita is one of the largest jails in the country, right?
Right. So we've created a housing unit to better facilitate the programming that goes on inside the jail.
But what does it actually look like? So they've got a separate housing unit, right, the RBI, but what's different than if I were doing a regular stint,
right,
at Santa Rita?
So this is, we have a probation officer working inside the jail. He will identify potential candidates for the Operation My Hometown project based on their risk and needs. So the probation officer will then give a list of names to our clinical case managers. So they will then contact the inmate, interview them, ask them if they want to be part of the program. Once the inmate is engaged, they will then drop an individualized reentry plan, which will include accessing program inside the jail.
So, mm-hmm. But it's all geared towards sort of starting a process that's going to continue.
That's correct. So you have to understand also, I'm a cop, and I'm learning this stuff as we're going as well. So you try to follow the news, and what's happening now in the workforce investment world is they're trying to do skill set training for people and link them to specific jobs on the way out. So we are trying to adapt and build a system that will begin in the jail with that process, and to build on the jail the programs that are already existed, but maybe to create others that might become more relevant to people as they come out so that they can more quickly land jobs.
And you are a cop. You're in law enforcement. Do you find resistance among some of your colleagues, or that you sound more like a social worker than a cop? What kind of response are you getting?
No. No. Some, a little bit, yeah. It's a different
framework.
It's a little bit different way of looking at public safety, right? I mean, I would suggest that we're in the public safety business, and law enforcement is a component of public safety. And there are other strategies to employ to better ensure the public safety, such as addressing these core drivers of crime, or what the DOJ calls the criminogenic factors of recidivism. That includes neighborhood building. And it's closely working with neighborhoods and residents to build infrastructure in communities, institutions that can then help to enfranchise communities. And those institutions can be anything from a soccer league to a scouting program to a social enterprise.
And you seem to be really rethinking what it means to be in charge of public safety.
I am. Yeah, I mean, I think that so this is a component of an overall public safety agenda, right? I think you still have to enforce the laws.
But if you have the trust of the communities that you're serving,
makes all the difference in the world. I would suggest that is priority number one. I think that the enfranchisement of all of our communities and the involvement in the process of all of our communities is a key to lowering crime and communicating better between law enforcement and community members. So that's in large part what we're doing. That's in large part why I think it's important that law enforcement's involved in this process. And I think that will help us get to some solutions.
Lieutenant Martin Neidefer oversees the Youth and Family Services Bureau Crime Prevention Unit for the Alameda County Sheriff's Office. So what do you think about this approach to public safety and crime prevention? You can give us a call at 415-264-7106 to weigh in. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106, and we'll try to feature your opinion on the air. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. For the past month, we've brought you ongoing coverage about life after prison. In the first part of our series, we shared a story about two men who spent most of their adult lives in prison, and they were released a little over a year ago.
I was only 17. I stayed with my mom before I went to prison, so this is my first time being on my own, freedom, you know, and it felt real good. You know, to be able to come here and close the door and not have nobody here, you know, solitude and think.
Reporter Louisa Beck followed the two men as they navigated challenges around finding housing and employment. Today we'll hear about the men's relationships with family members. And a note for our listeners, the names of formerly incarcerated men and their families in this story have been changed to protect their privacy.
It's a long drive from Oakland to the Dual Vocational Institution, a prison in Tracy, California. And for Brianna Bennett, growing up, that meant she rarely saw her father, William. He had never picked her up from school or gone with her to a movie. In fact, they had never stepped outside of the prison gates together.
It was hard being little, going to visit him when it was all said and done and it was time to go. I would cry because I wanted him to come home with me.
Nearly 3 million minors in America live with a parent in prison. Studies show that the majority of incarcerated parents reside over 100 miles away from the home they occupied before arrest. That makes visits time-consuming, expensive, and difficult to coordinate. In 1991, Brianna was born while William was locked away. When she was only about a year old, he got caught selling drugs in prison. After his drug tests came back positive, he was denied contact visits.
And I went behind the glass, and my daughter was behind the glass. She couldn't talk, but she like trying to say, why are you in here? Why I can't touch you? Why I can't give you some popcorn, stuff like that. Start feeling, well, I'm starting to do the same thing my father was doing to me, right? I'm doing this to my life, and it's affecting her. So I said, man, I can't continue doing this.
Catherine Katcher, executive director of Root and Rebound, a reentry advocacy center in Berkeley, says that for a lot of people in prison, family can be extremely motivating.
So just like getting a job is really important to a lot of people and the reason why they'll get out of bed every day, for some people, the chance to see and reunite with their children or another member of their family is what motivated them to work so hard in prison and to get out.
William describes that moment when he saw his daughter behind glass as a major turning point in his life. When he started attending Narcotics Anonymous, or NA, meetings, things really started to change for him.
I heard my story in there. Each time I go out, get some and take it. Oh, yeah, I could identify with that. Oh, yeah, I can feel that too. I can understand that.
The fourth step of the NA program required William to write a short story about his life. He wrote about his father.
Mainly about him, the way he treated my mother, how it affected me, and how I wound up with all that prison time. But when he read it, he said it hit him right in his heart. And he said he almost wanted to go drink, but he didn't. And he came and apologized to me. That's what enabled me to start my change, just that, what he did.
William started attending college programs in prison, volunteering with nonprofits and earning work certificates. He realized he could do a lot to improve his life and his chances of getting out. But when it came to being a father, he had less control. William and Brianna's mother divorced when she was around 5 years old, and William barely saw Brianna after the divorce.
My last 5 years, 6 years, I had never seen her. And then she didn't know when I was ever coming home. She didn't know because I didn't really know, and I didn't want to tell her I was coming home, and then they denied me or something happened, so I would never tell her.
Over half of parents in prison don't receive any personal visits from their children. When there's little to no contact, it becomes much harder to establish a relationship later on. William tried to maintain and strengthen his relationship to Brianna through letters.
He wrote me more than I wrote him. I would write every now and then. But yeah, he wrote me every week.
Did you like receiving that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the way they smell too.
What do they smell like?
His signature cologne.
I wear a Gypsy Musk. Put them on the letters too.
Then there was the day William came home after spending 31 years in prison.
I remember giving him a hug, a nice big hug. We took pictures, we went to eat. Yeah, it was nice. We went to the cheesesteak shop since we were on curfew and we got there kind of late.
But I was able to develop a relationship as her being a woman now. She's not a kid no more. She's a grown person. So we go out to eat.
We eat barbecue, pizza, soul food, Chinese food.
I went to Great America last week. She was supposed to go with me, but she couldn't make it. But I bought her a little teddy bear. Well, I won one for her.
I have to relearn him while he's out. It's a whole nother process. I learned that I'm more like my dad than I actually knew. A lot of the artists I listen to, he listened to. Kendrick Lamar, for example.
I tell her everything to be doing what I be doing.
Mm-hmm. Relationship-wise, everything.
You give him advice on women?
No, I just listen.
William and Brianna are building their relationship. But re-entry advocate Catherine Katcher says that a lot of people coming out of prison have a much harder time re-establishing family ties.
What do I do if I want to be able to see my child? I don't even know where she lives. Her mom up and left, and I haven't seen her in 10 years. And that's my biological child.
She doesn't think that family reunification is appropriate for every person in every case. But she says the potential benefits are huge.
It's not just healthy for that person. It can be very healthy for the child. Studies have shown that when someone lives with an absent parent who's incarcerated, that child is far more likely to end up incarcerated themselves or system involved. So if someone comes back in your life, even if they haven't been there for 10 years, when you're 10 years old or 12 years old, you know, they can still teach you a lot. Don't do it the way I did it. Do it a different way. You have choices.
Today, William is going to school to get a bachelor's degree. He's also working full-time and trying to be a supportive parent and role model for his daughter.
I'm doing it. So she see me doing it and she know that she can do it too. I did it. Anybody can do it.
For Cross Currents, I'm Louisa Beck.
To hear more from our series on reentry, visit our website. It's klw.org and click on Cross Currents. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Audrey Dilling, Rachel Dornhelm, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Ryan Miller, Stephen Short, Liza Veal, and Melanie Young. Today's show was engineered by Ted Muldoon and Seth Samuel. Our line producer was Leela Day. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And a special shout-out today to my mom, Judy Becker. Happy birthday, gorgeous. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And because of your support, we can proudly say we are listener-supported, handcrafted local public radio. Vetiver is the name of the San Francisco band you're hearing now. They'll be performing this Sunday at the Stern Grove Festival.
Every day, I'm away from you, Shays.
Vetiver will open for the 60s British invasion band, The Zombies. Music starts at 2 p.m. All of that information, along with more local music and more local stories, is at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. Just